Hello and welcome again to another audio interview. This is Eileen Parr speaking to you from Nottingham, and already it's October. I can't quite believe that. The year seems to be rushing past me. So it's good to take time to just slow down a little and listen to an interesting discussion. And today I'd like to welcome Jackie Holder, the Reverend Jackie Holder. Hi, Jackie.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being with us today. Looking forward to talking to you.
Thanks very much. I'm really looking forward to our conversation as well.
Good, good. Just start off with a little bit of centered breathing and a quick ring of the Tibetan bell. And just take a moment to center the breathing. Close your eyes if you feel it helps you to focus. And just drop into a quieter, calmer place where you can allow yourself to concentrate on Jackie's words and the wisdom that may come through her. So if we take three nice deep breaths, filling the abdomen and all of the diaphragm around to your back. Thank you for that. It's always good to just center. People come in from all kinds of busy places, and it's just a good way of catching a breath, indeed catching a breath. I'd like to introduce Jackie to you more fully. Jackie Holder, MABA, is an executive leadership coach, trainer, creative writing tutor, and interfaith minister. With a master's degree in creative writing and personal development, a postgraduate certificate in coaching, and a diploma in performance coaching, Jackie is well qualified to support others to develop themselves through writing. But it is Jackie's creative and intuitive approach, which draws on her personal experience and the difficulties she has faced and overcome, which in her view have given her the capacity to bring compassion, empathy, and understanding to her work with others. Jackie's work as a conference host and facilitator has taken her across the globe. She runs accredited coaching training and works as an assistant associate coach and trainer for a number of organisations in the UK. Jackie is the author of Soul Purpose, Self-Affirming Rituals, Meditations and Creative Exercises to Revive Your Spirit, published by Piacus Books in 1999, and Be Your Best Life Coach, Infinite Ideas Publishing, 2008. She's also a regular contributor to a range of other books and magazines. Jackie, I always like to tell people how I came to have a connection with the speakers, because I think it's important that they realise that I don't ask people to speak just out of the blue. I'm very careful how I choose people. And I was looking for speakers, and I found you on Nick Williams' Inspired Living.
Yeah.
And went through to your website and just loved what I found there.
Oh, thank you.
And one of the things that I loved was the absolute radiance of your smile. That just really drew me in. So warm, welcoming.
Oh. Thank you.
And then I signed up to the newsletter, and that was when I found out you had a book coming out this year. And as soon as I saw the title, I thought, I must speak to this lady. 49 Ways to Write Yourself Well, because it's something that's been an interest of mine.
Yeah.
And I have to say that I love the book. I mean, I love the book. There are so many things in this book that I could focus on. But as we discuss. I want to start off, I never like to assume that people who are listening understand exactly what we're talking about. I don't like to assume that they're exactly on the same page as us. So can we start with you talking about why you think that writing is such a great way to help people?
Yeah, that's a really good question to start off with. And I would say that one of the primary driving forces behind me writing a book about writing was because of the impact, both emotionally, physically, and psychologically, that keeping a journal for the last 23 years and a bit more haphazardly before I really became quite a dedicated journal writer has had on my own health, mental and emotional well-being. And it is as a result of really deepening myself into the practice of journal writing and recognizing how writing was one of the spaces and places in my life, not just my personal life, but in my professional and my business life, where I really was able to freely express and explore my emotions in a way that felt safe, didn't feel limited, and enabled me to process often very complex, difficult emotions and feelings and actually make sense of them so that I could then allow myself to be much more present and alive in my relationships, in my work, in my own writing. And it was as a result of that real value and the benefits, both therapeutically, that I got from writing, that really I've been on this path for the last 15 or more years to just reading everything that I could get around the discipline of creative writing. And I began to recognize that actually there's been increasingly over the last few years quite a lot of research that has been done that has proven my own personal experiences that writing does have a therapeutic benefit, that it does impact on our emotional well-being, our mental well-being, and our physical well-being. And one of the most well-known pieces of research, I'll start there first of all, was a piece of research that I'll just say in a nutshell what it was. It was done by Dr. James Pennebaker from the University of Texas. And you'll find his name often crops up in many of the books around some of the more recent research that has been done around the therapeutic benefits of writing. And he did a piece of research where he worked with trauma victims, and what they got them to do in the research was to write for 4 consecutive days for 20 minutes only, and they could write about the trauma that they had and express it in as much detail and as much and specific as they possibly could, but only for 20 minutes. And of course, what they did was they monitored them over a few months. And what they found was that psychologically, mentally and emotionally, their health and their well-being, both physically and mentally and emotionally, improved compared to the control group. And also they found that they used the medical services far less than the other groups. So this resulted in a number of research around using a similar kind of approach that had been done both by Pennebaker and his colleagues and lots of other people who have added to this. And it began to show up that actually writing does have a significant impact in a number of ways. Another piece of research, which I found interesting as well, was that when men wrote about their emotions, there was a significant difference and increase in the impact of writing about their emotions on the page for men than it was for women. So you can begin to see that there are lots of therapeutic benefits and values to one, keeping a journal, which is what I did, to writing out our emotions and our feelings as we go through our day. So, for example, I was having a conversation last night in a car with, I went to a literary evening with two writers, and it was a literary dinner. And I dropped one of the writers who was hosting the evening home. And we were talking, and he was saying that when he was grown up as a young man in South London, he was in something we call sound systems back then, he recognised that one of the ways that he got through a lot of the challenges that he faced as a young black man growing up in South London was that he began to write down his feelings in poems. And he was actually he used to be the MC, so he used to write out his emotions and his experiences. And he was saying to me, he's now a well-established best-selling fiction author. He was recently awarded an MBE. And he was saying to me that he felt that for a lot of people that he grew up with, they could actually, if they could find a way of writing down what they were feeling as close to when they were feeling it, there wouldn't be as much anger, as much rage, as much depression, as much mental health issues that we are actually experiencing in many of our communities. And this obviously relates back to being in the business world and just thinking about my work as an executive coach, going in and working with managers and leaders who are often working in very stressful, very toxic environments, who are working and moving very, very fast. Sometimes are not thinking about really investing time in their health and well-being. And what I am finding is that creative writing and reflective writing can be a very fast and easy applicable tool for them to use to really become much more mindful in how they are experiencing and being in their working environment and how they are managing their emotions. So suddenly it just feels like this work is just, it's like a tree that's just blossoming with all of these different branches that are connecting to how we can be much more whole, much more authentic, and much more real in our working lives.
We've only just begun, and you've brought up so many things. I'm scribbling notes as I go. One interesting thing is that I've done quite a lot of business networking over the years, and in latter years, because I was working as a business writer, as soon as I mentioned what I did, I used to get one of two reactions. The first one was, "Oh, I'd like to write, but I don't know where to begin."
Yeah.
Or, "Well, I've written," and a number of. It's interesting you talk about this men women thing.
Yes.
The number of women I've met who have had some kind of trauma and have written it out. I'm thinking in particular of a woman whose child died in quite difficult circumstances. And she had actually completed a book. She said, "I don't know if I'll ever dare to publish it."
Yeah.
But just the act of writing it out had...
Yeah.
You don't get over something like that, but it had helped her to come to terms with it.
Yes.
And the other thing about the men-women thing is I wondered whether it is because men traditionally, I'm not saying always, but traditionally, find it much more difficult to deal with emotional things than women.
Yeah. I think that is very true. And I think often for me, I'm in this process now of really beginning to cultivate some theories around the connection between mindfulness and writing. And one of the things that I am making the connection with is that for me, what I noticed in my journals is that I would often say what I wouldn't necessarily express firstly in my conversations with people or in meetings. So what writing enabled me to do was to go beneath the surface. So if we think about that, we're actually moving from the conscious mind into more of the subconscious and the unconscious mind. And often we're in our relationships and in our communications, we're often talking to people, but we're being driven by the subconscious and the unconscious. That's really where the real feelings and emotions are kind of alive and driving how we respond and how we behave. So for men, very often what is they haven't articulated and created for themselves are very safe, authentic spaces where they can connect with what it is they are thinking and feeling, which breaks outside of the stereotypes that are often put on men. So, for example, in my conversation last night with this fantastic, you know, author, he was saying, you know, for a lot of men, they might put on a, you know, a very stereotypical view and in terms of how they walk, how they talk, how they navigate the spaces in their everyday lives, but that's not always how they feel.
It's very interesting that, and particularly the aggressive thing that comes up, because I used to work as a holistic therapist.
Yeah.
And it's all there under your hands, basically. And I think that for a while, you were talking about the depression, the problems with mental health issues. And for a couple of years, I worked with a local mental health project.
Yeah.
Going in, doing head and shoulder massage. And I think that connection for me with the physical, people store things in the physical. And going back to your point about writing something out as close to when it happens as possible,
yeah,
I think that's a key point.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And I have two chapters in my book around, I call them writing. I've got nature wisdom, body wisdom, and writing wisdom. And those two chapters are our bodies, ourselves, and body stories. And this is where I think the mindfulness really connects, because our bodies, if you think of our bodies, when we really connect with what's going on inside the body, so for example, through the breath. So there's one of the writing activities I have in my book is around taking a long, deep breath in and then writing words, thoughts, feelings, associations out on the exhale.
Mm-hmm.
Then pausing by inhaling again and then allowing the words out and writing them down on the exhale. And often what happens, I remember someone years ago, I read that the skin is holds the memories of our stories. And if we think about that, our bodies can be the an amazing vehicle to reconnect with our real emotions. And when I say real, I mean, you know, what is really triggering us, what we're really feeling, what we're really sensing, but we might be suppressing, we might be denying, we might be pressing down. And it's often through getting into a mindful state that we allow, the body almost goes into a release process.
Mm.
And it allows stories to emerge.
Mm.
So, for example, a recent writing retreat that I ran in Glastonbury, one of the writers on the program, she said, well, I came here to write a book about X. And how comes I've got all these stories about my childhood that have just absolutely, she couldn't stop them coming.
Yeah.
She said, Jenny, I didn't come here to do that.
Yeah.
And it was because our retreats are a combination of really sacred space, mindfulness, nature wisdom, and then people get to connect with what they really are meant to be writing.
Yeah.
It was wonderful. It was wonderful to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very interesting. I want to move on in a moment, but just to think about the experience that I've had with journaling. And I did Julia Cameron's morning pages for quite some time, and it was just amazing what came out. And sometimes I read it back, and most times I didn't, but you know, it was like where did that come from? Completely, what seemed to be completely out of the blue.
Well, that's the amazing thing. I have to say, Eileen, that Julia Cameron was the catalyst for me turning the key and becoming a committed journal writer.
Mm.
I was actually off work. I'd been signed off sick off work. I was in bed depressed. I heard the post come, the post person deliver the post. I got out of bed, went downstairs, and my friend in America had sent me a book. She had no idea what I was going through. She sent me a book in the post for my birthday. And it was The Artist's Way. And that was over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And it was as a result of doing Morning Pages that I really started the practice of doing Morning Pages and keeping a journal. And that's one of the things I teach a lot when I'm running creative writing workshops, is that the process and the practice of writing Morning Pages gets the garbage out of the way, is a very healthy and easy outlet for releasing feelings and emotions and stuff, just stuff that's getting in the way. Mm. And what will often happen is it creates the way for your creativity to then flourish, your ideas to kind
like
of...
unblocks the...
It unblocks.
Yes.
It really, really...
Say something rude.
Yeah, but we know what we mean, don't we? It really is a letting go and an opening up, really.
Yeah. Can you just outline maybe, you know, for the people like the ones that I meet all the time who say, well, I don't know where to start.
Yeah.
Can you just outline the simplest way that someone could begin?
Yes. My simplest technique and that I suggest to people, and they always look at me really surprised, I say, you don't have to write for long. You just need to get a book, a piece of paper, an index card, back of an envelope. I don't care what you want to write on. The way you write is not the issue. And I give the guidelines in my book. I just say, write for 7 minutes. And I say, write as fast as you can. So the idea is that you write as fast as you can. You do not censor what you write. You just write what comes to you. And often the key to this is most people get it quite quickly. They realize that after 7 minutes, 12 minutes has gone by and they're still writing.
Yeah.
And these are people who say, well, I've got nothing to write about. I'm not sure what to say. I need to make sure this makes sense. You'll see them and they won't look up. Mm. And I have a little chime in, you know, like you did the Tibetan bowl in my retreats. I have a timer and I'll be, you know, hitting the timer gently and they'll still be writing away. I'll have to hit it again. But I do that so they really get that we have to trick our mind. The mind is very, very powerful. And we have certain patterns that are very deeply embedded. And the mind thinks that, you know, in order to be a writer, often the normal way that the mind will speak to most people is like, you know, you need to use all the right words. You need to have a lot of time. It needs to make sense what you're doing. So this idea of using 7 minutes, and I use seven deliberately because I find it's a number that's very, it's used a lot across all kinds of different cultures, but it has a very significance in terms of reverence, sacredness.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a nice, it's a really nice number to work with. And what will happen is that the mind will think that you're not really being serious.
Mm.
7 minutes?
Mm.
Really, come on. And your mind or your critic, really, what we're talking about here in terms of writing, will often be distracted elsewhere.
Yeah.
So when you sit down to do 7 minutes, it's easy, it's doable. Coaches will love this. It's something that's manageable, it's achievable, and you could get going quite quickly.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing you can do on the spot.
I think the one of the keys as well, what you said, is just to write fast.
Yes.
Because that also stuffs the inner critic out.
Well, Julia Cameron said, you know, the inner critic goes at 35 miles an hour, whilst you're writing at 70 miles an hour.
Yeah,
because the inner critic wants to keep stopping you to check your spelling. It's making sense. Is your handwriting good? You know, it will just think of everything that is going to stall you in that process of getting yourself onto the page. The other thing, Eileen, just very quickly, as I have writing prompts in my book as well, I've got a page of writing prompts, and I find they work brilliantly. So for a lot of people, it's really quite difficult of knowing where to start.
Yes.
So the idea of a writing prompt, it's either a word, a sentence, and I also include in my book visual writing prompts.
Yes, so some people need the pictures. Yeah.
So whatever your preferred learning modality, there's enough choice there for to stimulate you onto the page, because that's really what we want to do. We know that we've already got all the material that we need. Flannery O'Connor said, you know, if you've had a childhood, you've got more material than you require if you survive childhood.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's like it's all there. It's about how we get it out.
Yeah. I'm just having a look at your writing prompts, and there's things like a childhood taste, a tree I remember, you know, what are 10 things people don't know about you?
Yeah.
I mean, they're all just simple things, but they are places to start.
And often they will take you somewhere where you didn't expect, but actually that was already sitting there in your subconscious, in your unconscious, just waiting for the moment that you would get yourself into that right state in both RIGHT and WRITE to bring it up.
Well, that takes us perfectly on to the second thing we were going to focus on, which is developing the relationship with the inner voice, because that's another thing that I've found, certainly with myself at times and from other people's experiences, that they find it difficult to trust this inner voice.
Yeah. Well, I think it's I have a lot of conversations with people who would consider themselves writers and people who would not consider themselves writers and who often are very much writer. And I've come to the conclusion that the thing with the inner voice is that I think it takes time to really nurture and build your relationship with your inner voice, that you will trust that it's there and that it has something to say, and what it has to say is of value and is valid.
It's a bit like a physical friendship, isn't it? You there are times when you meet people and you feel drawn to them, but it still takes time to build up trust and the relationship. And to me, it's exactly the same. That's what it feels like to me.
Well, exactly, because when you think about it, we have done so much to disconnect ourselves from that inner voice. And I know a lot of people might get put off. They're thinking, well, I'm not doing this right. My inner voice is not speaking to me. I'm not getting any ideas flowing through me. But it is that thing about, you know, very much this is about practice. It's like with anything. It's a bit like what Malcolm Gladwell wrote the book. I think it was Blink, where it's about the 1,000 hours.
Mm-hmm.
When you do the 1,000 hours, that makes you a master of something. You know, really cultivating and really deepening our relationship with our inner voice means developing some kind of a practice. Some kind of a practice that is going to enable you to hear it. So, you know, what I'm advocating, what you're advocating, is we're saying that, you know, by committing to writing as a practice, you're going to hear that inner voice, and the more you do the practice, the louder your inner voice is going to become, the more you're going to be able to capture it, and the more you will then be able to trust it as your relationship develops and blossoms and flowers, a bit like nature.
Mm.
And
well, I very much liked your example of you running, Jackie, because that is something that you do, but you don't always want to do it.
Absolutely. I was just about to say that because, you know, writing is one way of developing the practice. And for some people, it might be about being out in nature. And for me, back in 2000, for about 4 years, it was running, where I had a daily practice and ritual of going on a long run each morning. And I was quite a prolific writer then in terms of writing in my journals. I mean, ideas would just absolutely just flow out of me. And I just couldn't stop writing. I still got those journals, and they're still waiting for me to return to them to really, you know, harvest a lot of really good material that came out of that. But whether it's running, walking, you know, I was talking to some people last week and they were saying, you know, I really find it helpful going to the gym, doing my spinning class. That's where I really get in touch with what we call the theta state, which is that if you imagine that we've got different states that we can access our creativity and our intuition, the theta state, I believe, is the highest state. And often it's those activities that are where you're repeating a pattern that will help us get into those states.
Well, it is exactly. I mean, I've said this to people before. You have to develop a writing muscle. It is a writing muscle, almost. You have to develop so that you can sit down, place your hands on a keyboard, or, you know, write something in a book with a physical pen, and know that something will come. There's no way around it, really, is there?
But that requires really the ability to be able to trust, the ability to be patient. Because let's put it this way, when I started running, I was not a pretty sight, Eileen. It was not a pretty sight, me running around my park. And in fact, I remember my inaugural first run was around my local park in South London, Brockwell Park. And I remember when I was getting up, I'd literally got three quarters of the way around the park. And the last part of the run, which I'd worked out, was uphill. So I thought, okay, I'm going to do it the hard way and run around and see if I can get up the hill. And as I hit the bottom of the steep incline up, there was an elderly woman. She'd just walking past me, and she could hear me panting and frothing at the mouth. And she literally turned around and said to me, can't you go any faster, or you need to be doing better than that? I mean, you know, it's not the kind of thing you normally turn around and say to somebody, but it was such a momentous moment for me. Yeah. The fact that she had decided to say that to me spurred me to put everything that I had into my body. And I actually got to the end of, I got up the incline, I got to where I started, and that was it. Every single morning I was up 5:30 around my local park. Within a month, I'd grown out of that space. I was running another 3 miles to another park and then running around that one. Then I extended it, and it just became something else. And that's what we're doing with the writing muscle. I think you're absolutely right. We have to be willing to start badly. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. Lamotte said, you know, those shitty first drafts.
Yeah.
We have to be willing to allow ourselves to be with the mess. And a very good coach, Ramon Williamson, I think I was on one of his seminars a couple of years ago, and he said progress, not perfection.
Yeah, I think that's what you have to get out of your head. If you've not started to write and you think you want to write, you have to get out of your head that it's always going to look good, because it's not.
No, it isn't.
And nor should it.
No, it doesn't. And I remember about 5 years ago, I read a book For the Forest or the Trees, something like that. But I know the name of the author. Her name's Betsy Lerner. And she had this a story in there of her pitching one of, I think it may have been one of her first books to a commissioning editor. She was also working in publishing at the time. So it was a pretty nerve-wracking experience for her. And she had gone to this meeting with this commissioning editor, and the story went something like, the commissioning editor gave her back a poem and said, "What do you think of this poem?" And Betsy read it and thought, "This is a really good poem." And the commissioning editor said, "Well, I took your words, took out some of them, and I've just given you back your own poem, your own words." And I thought, and you know, that story, and this is the honest truth of what I'm saying to you. On Monday, I think it was, I opened up my journal. I was preparing for another event that I'm doing at the weekend, and I thought, I want this poem that I'd read this poem in a book or a magazine, and what I did, I had handwritten it down in my journal. I must have done that about 2 weeks ago. And I thought, I need to find that poem because I think I want to share this poem with the group that I'm going to be working with. So I search through my journal. I come to the poem. I read it. But for some reason, I have not put down the source of the poem, which is not like me. Mm. I've just published a book. My commissioning editor made it absolutely clear they would not publish any of my quotes without sources. Mm. I managed to get a few through that I couldn't find the source, because what I used to do was just write down quotes in my journals and forget to say where I found them. And I thought, this is not like you, Jackie. So guess what I did? I Googled the first line of the poem. I thought that will throw up who the author was, because it was quite a famous person, a well-known poet who'd written the poem that I'd written down. Nothing came up in Google. It took me about 10 minutes to realise I had written the poem. Because I didn't recognise the depth of what I had been feeling. And I remember what I'd done. I wrote the poem and said to myself, in the back of my head, it was a very quiet voice. I said, "That wasn't very good, was it, Jackie?" And I just closed my journal and I've forgotten all about it. When I went back to it, I thought, this is a great poem.
Yeah.
And I didn't recognise it. And that's what I think we capture.
That's a great story, Jackie, because that is something that affects every single writer when they write something and don't think it's very good.
I've got goosebumps just telling you. Honestly, it was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
That was my poem about I'm going through a difficult time with a particular area of my life, and I couldn't believe how rich I had captured what I was feeling.
Mm.
That I wasn't, you know, in that moment when I'd look back on it, I thought, oh no. But when I went back, I was like, wow.
Yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it, that again is an area that writers often struggle with, that it's certainly an area that I've been experiencing this year, because I host these interviews and I host online events, and my wish is to showcase the authors and speakers that I meet, and I'm being pushed from the inside to have a bigger voice.
Yes.
And I think it's back to Marianne Williamson's quote about, you don't realise just how powerful you are.
Yeah.
And I think that's what comes through with the story that you just told about your poem. Sometimes we're frightened to own up to it.
Yeah. I think that is something that I realise that I have been sitting on quite a huge amount of my power. And you know, given that we're talking about the inner voice, for me, it really is about our abilities to authentically allow our voices to be heard, mm-hmm. and to allowing our voices to have a bigger reach. I don't want to be an Oprah. I don't particularly, you know, need to be famous in, you know, the ways that many people traditionally talk about fame. But it is about, like, in the moments that we're having right now, knowing that we are connecting to people in the way that feels very wholehearted to me right now. And knowing that, you know, in a way what Seth Godin talks about, which is finding your tribe.
Yeah.
And to me, there's nothing that makes me happier than when I connect with my tribe and my tribe connects with me.
Yeah, it is. It is exactly that. And I've certainly been blessed in the last 12 months with feedback from people, you know, around the world who said it was just this one thing that this speaker said, or this one practice that they gave me that made the difference. I mean, I have a lady who's connected to me from the middle of Australia. And I put a small event on in the summer about, you know, increasing your creativity. And there was one speaker who was talking a lot about being in nature. That was what he did. And she emailed me after she'd heard the interview and said, I got up in the middle of the interview. I didn't need to hear anything else. I went outside. I sat in my chair and I waited and I opened up. And she said, I received something that was just so profound and has changed my life.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't get better than that, can you?
And that's what I mean. So when we're doing our, in a way, my first book was called Soul Purpose. So when we're doing our soul purpose, these are the kinds of connections that we're making. And for me, that is the work. That is you being your powerful, authentic self. And, you know, it doesn't mean that, you know, your name has to be on the top of LinkedIn or Twitter, or you have to have 3,000 followers on Twitter, because you could have 300 followers on Twitter and still be even more powerful and authentic than someone who has 3,000.
You see, I think that's something that I want to bring out in the work that I do, that, you know, when you talk to people about writing, very often they equate that immediately with having a bestseller.
Yeah.
And I think there are so many more ways that writing is powerful. And I think this business of the journal writing that you talk about and that I have done is that even if that is the only writing that you ever do, that is enough to shift your life.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that's something that has really kept me sane through the last 20 years. Is when I've kind of gone off balance and I thought, oh, right, okay, my first book, Soul Purpose, which I have to say, I still get letters about. Can you imagine? I wrote that book that book was published in 1999. I've had about 4 or 5 emails this side of the year about Soul Purpose, people telling me it's still by their bedside, you know, why haven't I gotten it on Kindle? You know, this book has made a difference. You realize that nothing you write is ever wasted.
No.
By writing my journals, when I was able to untangle myself from the fact that my publishers decided not to reprint that book and it went out of print, I still could authenticate myself and authorize myself as a writer. Mm. Because I have hundreds of journals, much to my partner's horror, all over our home. I couldn't hide from the fact that I was a writer.
Mm.
It's not about necessarily what you have in the public domain.
No.
And, you know, that is very comforting to me. Now, what I'm going to do with those journals, Eileen, is another thing. You know, that is my challenge now. What do I do with them?
Yeah, I think you need another lifetime, Jackie.
I do. I think so. Definitely.
I was going to go on to talk about shadow, but that is such a big topic that I really don't want to underplay that. And maybe another conversation on another day, we could go through that.
Yeah.
I'm going to be very selfish now and just ask you about the labyrinth, because that was something that really spoke to me in your book.
Mm-hmm. And What's your particular interest in the labyrinth? Why?
Well, I've never actually used finger labyrinths. I've actually walked a couple of labyrinths, but you describe it in a slightly different way from what I've seen it described before about using a finger labyrinth. So could you just outline that, the way you teach people to use a finger labyrinth?
Yeah. So the idea, I suppose the key thing about using the finger labyrinth was I realized that from my experience of walking the labyrinth, that actually a labyrinth walk is a very mindful walk.
Mm.
So, and every time I've done them, I found them really helpful in all kinds of different ways. And then I thought, well, actually, the challenge with that in terms of encouraging people to walk a labyrinth is not everyone is going to get access to a labyrinth. They're not going to know where to find a labyrinth. And you might not really want to go off and do that by yourself. So I'm thinking, how can I bring in a process that embodies the labyrinth and can impact on our writing? And that's when I came across... I don't know. I think I may have been on a workshop, but someone showed me an actual finger labyrinth. They bought a finger labyrinth. And I thought, oh, my gosh. So this idea of actually holding a finger labyrinth or having one printed out on a page means that you can move yourself around the labyrinth using your finger. Mm. So in the book, what I suggest that people do is that they print off a finger labyrinth from the internet, that they choose a quiet space, they might want to put some music on in the background, they prepare themselves, so this is part of the preparation, by taking a few deep breaths to clear their mind, and then they start with placing their finger at the entrance of the labyrinth as they think about a question that they are going to, that they might want some insight into, or they just want to have some time to think about. And they are going to use their time in terms of walking the finger labyrinth to just see what comes to mind to them. So that they start the walk from the entrance of the labyrinth, and they walk themselves from the entrance right using their finger to trace the path of the labyrinth right to the center. So if you imagine your finger is almost like your legs doing the walk around the labyrinth, that is actually a very mindful activity. And I've done it several times, and I've noticed that each time I've actually got slower, and it's taken me to different places and to deeper places more reflectively in myself.
Mm.
And then when you get to the center with your finger, you rest. And you observe and you just notice and you just become very mindful in the moment and you see what comes to you. And then you use your finger to trace the path back from the center right around in your return to the entrance. And then you give yourself 10-15 minutes to sit and record and reflect and write about the experience and notice what came to you.
Mm.
And really, it's a very mindful activity, one that can be great to just find different ways of connecting with what you want to write about, to finding a different way of finding out, of finding different creative solutions to a challenge or an issue that you have. And for, you know, for people who have walked the labyrinth, it's often like it was very much used in ancient times as an opportunity for pilgrimages, spiritual reflection, time for contemplation, and you can use that finger labyrinth in the same way. And I think all of this really builds material for us to really allow ourselves to express ourselves more wholly, as in wholly on the page.
I walked a labyrinth in Switzerland in August with a group of people, and we did a circle ritual before we went into the labyrinth. And I kind of not set any intention particularly, just to be open to what what would happen. And I was 2/3 of the way through, and I got such a jolt of energy, I can't tell you. And I hadn't, I really hadn't expected that. And it was almost like, you know, in healing, you hold your hands out, and it was almost like I was receiving energy through my hands. And
yeah.
I got exactly the same reaction. And everybody who went had a fairly profound experience. Just quite amazing. And it was kind of rounded things off for me, because in June I actually interviewed a lady, Catherine Anderson, who is a photographer in North Carolina. She comes originally from South Africa, but she's living in America now. She actually created a labyrinth in her back garden.
Yeah.
Which was very interesting talking to her, because she uses it with classes as part of a way of helping them, you know, increase their creativity. Very interesting conversation I had with Catherine.
And I can relate to what Catherine has done there as well, because I used to run, co-facilitate a personal development program for women who had been in the prison system, women who had mental health issues. We ran a 6-week personal development program, and on our second to last session, we would create a labyrinth in the room that we worked in.
Wonderful.
We just used string.
Yeah.
And candles and roses, and watching the women walk the labyrinth and doing exactly what we did here was amazing. They would go through very similar experiences to what you described.
Yeah, it's it is quite a profound experience, really it is.
And it might be helpful here, Eileen, to just one of the things I say in my book is that, in terms of, for people who had Alzheimer's, who were schizophrenic and experienced dyslexia, they found that when they walked the labyrinth, or they did a figure labyrinth, this resulted in short-term increases in their mental clarity, their stress, and their health and well-being.
Yeah. Well, we're coming towards the end of the interview. This is a wonderful little book. I say little, not to demean it in any way, but it is not a large book. It's not intimidating.
Yeah.
It has so many things in it. I have done some of the exercises in it, and one of the ones that really made me smile and sit up was I did the non-dominant hand, the animal one.
Yeah.
Yes. And I went into that and you know, quite happy and just wondering what would come out. And the first one that I got with my right hand, which is my dominant hand, was a dolphin. Well, I was very happy with a dolphin, you know.
Yeah.
Beautiful dolphin. Did it with my non-dominant hand, and
yeah,
I got a bear.
I actually
checked up on the meaning of the bear as a power animal, I just laughed out loud, because it was all the stuff that's coming up for me.
Yes, very connected.
Absolutely.
And the dolphin is often the when we write with our dominant writing hand, that's often the way we want to be seen.
Absolutely.
You know, the way you described dolphin there was like, yes, I was very happy with dolphin. Yes, I would love. But the bear perhaps is like the one that you would, you know, would kind of push away a bit more, not want to own up to. And I have to say, Eileen, that exercise in my book has become like our signature exercise that we use on our book launches.
Yes.
I did it in the one that we did, the book launch we did here in the UK. We did it as an interactive exercise at the book launch. It was fascinating.
Yeah.
And then we did it in Barbados, and it was equally as fascinating.
I can imagine, because it is, I tend to be quite visual, so I got images. So I had this wonderful dolphin leaping out of the ocean.
Yeah.
And then I got this bear, and not a bear on all fours. I got a bear standing up on its hind legs.
I can't say anymore. That is fantastic. Because a bear standing up represents a very different bear to a bear on four paws.
Absolutely.
How brilliant is that?
Yeah. So I have absolutely no reservations about this book. I'd recommend it to anybody. For an experienced writer, there's lots of writing prompts and exercises that you can do that will maybe just stimulate you to look at things in a different way. For a beginner writer, there's a whole process. You are supported from beginning to end of this process. And I think, Jackie, you've done a brilliant job in bringing all of this research and exercises and people's work together. And I really, really commend you for that.
Thank you so much. It's been, it's great. And it is about bringing things together. And, you know, I really like the fact that you really was able to highlight how this book can be really helpful for experienced writers to look at things in a different way, and how it really supports and guides those who may be new to writing and not sure how they want to kind of progress their writing.
So I would recommend anybody to buy it. I'd recommend anybody to go to one of Jackie's workshops, even though I haven't been to one, because I can imagine that they are just so wonderful. Jackie, do you want to just spend a couple of minutes just directing people to your website and tell people what's happening with you?
Yes, of course. Thank you very much. My website, so my first, if you want to find out about me and what I do kind of overarchingly in terms of my work, in terms of my coaching, my writing, and other workshops that I do, you can go to jackieholder.com. And Jackie is spelled J-A-C-K-E-E, Holder, H-O-L-D-E-R, that's all one word, so it's www.jackieholder.com. And you can find out more about me, how I think, you know, how I work. I've got some blogs on there. I've got a writing blog, a coaching blog, and a blog about trees. And then we've just set up our new website to support the book, which I'm really excited about. That's at www.writeyourselfwell.com. And what we're going to be doing there is we're going to be moving the writing pages from my website over to the writeyourselfwell.com website. And that's where you'll find out about my retreats, my workshops. There's going to be loads of free resources, which as well as the free resources that you can find on my website, jackieholder.com. Plus, I'm going to be having some online ebooks and courses, which will now take the material that you will find in 49 Ways to Write Yourself Well and create some online experiences, because I'm really excited about just finding different ways to connect with people and bring that experiential part into it, into the virtual world.
And is the other two sample chapters still available for people to download?
Yeah, you can get two sample chapters of 49 Ways to Write Yourself Well by just going to jackieholder.com, going onto the homepage, and there is a button on there where you can just click to download those two sample chapters.
Jackie, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Would you just bring us to a nice close with doing a short prayer? I'll just tell people about the next interview, and then if you close us out in prayer, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, that'd be lovely. Thank you.
Okay, so next month, the November interview, is going to be with a lady in the UK. Another lady in the UK is Lisa Dory, and Lisa works with the angels. And I think that it's going to be a very interesting conversation, because we're shaping it around coming up to our November event, which is all about voice. So I'm very much looking forward to Lisa. I had a chat with her recently, and I think that that's going to be quite an interview. So, Jackie, if you'd like to close our time together, that would be wonderful.
Thank you. So, Great Spirit, I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for this moment. Thank you for all the wisdom, the insights, the words, the healing that have opened into the space Thank you for allowing us to be. Thank you for allowing us to see. Thank you for allowing us to feel. May the words from our conversations touch the souls and the hearts of many. Amen.